Welcome to Let's Get Ugly, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest beauty, wellness, and lifestyle secrets that aren't always pretty, but always real.
We're your co-hosts, Trishna and Disha.
The sister duo keeping it 100% authentic, really silly, and sassy all at the same time.
We are super silly and sassy. Grab your favorite drink and come join us on this episode of Let's Get Ugly.
Sarah Pascarella, welcome to London and Let's Get Ugly.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We are so excited. I mean, your journey that we're going to dive into from California to Paris to being in like such an exciting time of life is something we're really, really going to divulge today. Super. As well as your manifestations as well.
Yes, all about it.
I feel like Sarah's journey is so interesting. Like, you have basically created a massive life transition and then just basically decided, I'm going to put this on TikTok. Yeah. And I'm going to put this shit out there.
Yeah.
And I actually think that it is so cool. So let's just first get started from the first question, which is, what inspired you to leave everything behind and move to Paris?
So I was in college. And I graduated with a bachelor's degree in interior design and journalism. My college was in LA County. Once you're there for a while, you get stuck in this bubble. And for a while, I was feeling so uninspired. And I was going into two fields that require you to be creative, think outside the box, and pull inspiration from all over the world, basically, especially when it comes to design. And I felt like my inspiration was lacking, that my world knowledge wasn't there, that I wasn't able to contribute as much to conversations, the design process. So I thought, what better way to do that than to travel? But in order to do so, I wanted to do it for a long time because I don't think you learn that much by only traveling for a week or two. So I was like, what's the easiest way to get myself in a different country and stay there for a long period of time? And then I found out about au pairing, which is essentially a nanny to a foreign country. And I was like, I have no choice. I have to do it. And I did it. Put in my 2 weeks at the architecture firm, picked up my entire life, everything changed, and came to Paris.
That is so wild, especially because like when you move to a new country as well, there's a big cultural adjustment that happens.
Huge.
And it's probably like night and day from the States for sure. But what was the most challenging part about that and how did you overcome it? Because I feel like we've been watching your journey for a while and it seems like it's going well and you've adjusted well. So what was that transition point really?
I definitely had a hard time in the beginning. It was not all sunshine and rainbows from the get-go at all. I was with a first host family that I ended up leaving, breaking my contract with them about 4 months in, switching host families. So that was really hard. So those first 4 months were brutal because my whole life was different. I had not that many friends to lean on. They were all in a different time zone. What I was eating was different. The language was different. Everything. I didn't have a car. I didn't have my routine anymore. All of it was very, very different and hard to manage. And I think like a month in, I was like, what did I do? I was getting like the scaries. Like, I know there's going to be a threshold that I'm going to pass to where it's going to start being good, but you just have to push through. Honestly, I think the hardest part was the language difference. Felt like I couldn't speak to anyone, especially in the beginning when I was in a town just outside of Paris where there wasn't as much English. I'd never dabbled in language before this. And now I was in this place where I couldn't express myself. I think to overcome that, relied a lot on my facial expressions. I became a theater kid almost, where my entire personality was based on how I dress, my facial expressions, my body language, and no longer my words. So that's kind of how I overcame it. And then of course, just started learning French after a while.
Let's focus on the positive though, because you did end up learning French. You left that host family, moved into another one. Tell us a little favorite memory or like something that's really memorable about this new host family you're with.
Yes, I adore them. They're the best host family I could have asked for. Everything I wanted put into one family. So many great memories, but if I were to pick one, which was when we went to Normandy to their family's, I call it a chateau, but they don't. To me, everything's a chateau. But it's this big, beautiful home in Normandy, and it was dead silent, which I was looking forward to. Living in Paris, it's so loud all the time. I loved being there with the kids because usually we're go, 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 you have to do your homework, you have to take your bath. Like, we're on a strict time schedule every day. And when we were in Normandy, it wasn't like that at all. So we just were very present, and we got to do things in nature, which these little city girls, like, experiencing picking from apple trees and seeing cows and chickens. Such a heartwarming little weekend that I had with them, and to be able to be super present with them was so nice.
I think that's really sweet. We have followed your journey with them. In fact, actually, I think the French child chats was what really, really went viral.
I'm sure, yeah.
And that's, I remember just being so obsessed with hearing the storytelling and the narrative, and like you trying to figure out most of the time what they're trying to communicate with you.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure. But food? You said food was a struggle?
Yeah, so in the beginning, not to bash the first host family, but I was only eating pasta with butter sometimes. No salt, no pepper, no sauce, no meat. And my family's Italian. I was like, what is this? What? I'm eating the same dry pasta every single day. I know there's better French cuisine out there, and it's not this. And as someone who's like usually going to the gym and usually super about food, my mom's a holistic health counselor. Like, I grew up around good food, contrary to popular belief about Americans, but I know it. So then when I switched host families, they were a lot better at cooking. I think also have like more time to cook, which I will say is a big proponent of it. But now it's gotten better. I've kind of discovered new things that make me happy. I'm not really relying on the same food that made me happy in the States, but now I have new things like different pastries, different French dishes that now I can always go to, and I'm like, okay, I know this is gonna be good.
What's your favorite?
So there's this torsade, I think is how you say it. And it's not at every boulangerie, which is like a pastry shop in France. But there was this one in Rueil-Malmaison, which is the town that I was living in before Paris, the city center. And they had the best torsades. And I called them my emotional support torsades, because every time I was feeling down, I was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go get a torsade. And if you look in the beginning of my TikTok journey, you could see a lot of my ranting videos have a torsade in them. So many comments were like, girl, you are always eating this damn pastry. I'm like, it really, the sweet treats, they get you going.
What is a torsade?
It's like a twisted pastry, but there's some type of cream in it. It's not even cream. It's like sugar glaze, and then it has like chocolate chips. It's so good. But yeah, I can't find it in every boulangerie, so it's even more of a rarity to me, which in my eyes makes it better.
That's so good. I mean, we had a food request.
Yes, oh, we did.
She forgot them.
No, I didn't.
Oh! Oh.
There's saucy souls. What up?
Oh my God, I was literally going to be like, did you forget them?
Oh my gosh, so excited for these. I mean, we'll try them later.
Yeah, but
so good.
We were literally desperate. We saw you eating these and we were like, we need to try the mini saucy sauce.
Yes.
So I am so excited for
this. I think this is like the best brand. At first I was buying like the bougie ones from this like big La Grande Pisserie. And then I realized that these taste the exact same or now are way cheaper. I was like, okay, we're just going to get them these ones. And I think a lot of French people like know that brand too, so they could attest.
Oh my gosh, so excited. Literally, yeah. I feel like food is such a big part of the experience, especially when you're adjusting
totally.
To a new place. But I'm sure there must have been like other cultural misunderstandings aside from food. Food's a big part of culture. My favorite part.
Yes.
How did you navigate those? Like, was there anything that like was so different to the States in terms of like how you would behave or what you would do that everyone was like, what is that?
Yeah, there's definitely multiple. One of the main ones is sarcasm. Sarcasm reads differently there. And I had originally posted a video about this and I was like, French people don't understand sarcasm. And I got shredded in the comments. People were like, French people invented sarcasm. What are you talking about? I was like, no, every time I express sarcasm like I usually do, they don't get it. They don't pick it up. Then I started to realize that there is a difference, because sometimes they'll say things that are meaning to be sarcastic and I don't pick them up. Number two would be speaking volume. Everyone says that Americans speak very loudly, and I think it's so true. Now I've definitely lowered my voice. I feel like I'm whispering. And I remember when I had first come back to the States for Christmas, my friends were like, why are you talking so low? And I'm like, am I really? I didn't even notice. But I also try to argue that sometimes, because I think that the English language is just so prominent. You can pinpoint it anywhere. For a lot of other languages, I can't. Maybe it's just because I haven't been around that many different languages. But yeah, speaking volume and sarcasm.
I love that. I mean, like, I think the American in Paris that we all see is obviously Emily in Paris.
Yeah.
And, like, how true is that in terms of people's understanding of what American people are like? Like, does she actually put on an act of being so American in Paris that it's like people can spot them from a mile away?
There's definitely some truth to it. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I relate to her a lot. She took a long time to learn French, as did I. I only started taking classes a couple months ago when I had been there a year. So wow. I should definitely know more French than I do now. But I don't know. It was just my whole life was different. So I was like, you know what? I can't do this. It's so stressful. So Emily still hasn't started learning French, or at least she has, and she just absolutely butchers it. When they do try speaking French, it's so choppy. Like, there's no rhythm to it, which there should be. And I think I see that a lot when we're trying to learn French, but eventually you get the hang of it after practice. Her outfits, I mean, I feel like I am pretty much the same as her. Like, I think her stylist is so cute. It kind of reminds me of like Disney Channel a little bit, which, yeah, I love that. So yeah, I think there's some truth to her actions and the way that she deals with French people and her culture shock relating to a lot of this now. Because before I was like, oh, it's cute, Paris, whatever. But now I'm like actually living her life. I'm like, yep, that's true.
Did Emily in Paris start when you were in California?
Yeah.
Okay, so did you watch it? Were you a fan before?
Yeah, I loved it. Still love it.
Was it a pinpoint for maybe the destination of Paris? Not really.
Really, yeah. I mean, everyone always asks me why I chose Paris, and I never have an answer. Like, honest to God, it was Rome at first. Which is funny that now the next season is going to be in Rome. I'm like, okay. So then I saw that France actually has like an au pair specific visa, but I had no knowledge of Paris, no knowledge of French, nothing before. It was really, I look back now and I'm like, Sarah, you're crazy. Like, there was no reasoning for it. It was just like, yeah, Paris, I heard it's artsy. Sick, let's do it. Like that, I got the visa and I moved.
Wow.
Gosh, I just think it's amazing, like, to have the kind of strength as well to do that, because it is literally like leaving everything behind and then finding new friends and community. And obviously, like, since you've been there for a bit longer now, I assume that has grown with you as well, as has your following, which is amazing. So I guess it's like support all around, which is what you need in a new space.
Absolutely. That is one thing I miss the most, is community. Finally gotten to the point where I'm building it. And I feel supported with the people around me now. But in the beginning, I was like, oh, God.
Because I would say now you have quite a nice community. Definitely. Like, you've got friends. Definitely. And they're also expats in Paris.
Yeah.
And you guys have like a nice little like niche, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But how is it different to your friendships at home?
I have amazing friends in California. That was the hardest part, was to leave them and my family. I'm a very big family person. And I just had a lot of fun in university. I was in a sorority for a semester. Then I was in my major, of course, interior design. And then, of course, like I said, I had my family, friends at UCLA that I was really close to. Just felt really connected to the community. So then, yeah, leaving that all behind, it really is like starting over. But then now here in Paris, it feels like communities all around me. And it could be on your daily walk, that's community. It could be in a coffee shop that you frequent, that's community. But I don't really think I had that same experience in California. Now in Paris, it's much less cliquey. It just feels like Paris as a whole is community. Like, the whole city is your community.
Wow, yeah. I think that's really cool. Speaking of like, kind of, well, we had a chat. We had a really nice long WhatsApp video call.
Yes.
And we were talking about, you know, how did you plan this? Like, how did it come about? And one of the things that you mentioned was journaling. And when you were in that kind of dark space that you mentioned, journaling was your way of getting out of it. And so could you tell us a little bit about how this practice of journaling came to be for you?
My mom has always journaled. She has papers of when she was going through divorce, and she said it's the one thing that helped her get through when either there was no one to talk to or she just had so much in her brain. My grandmother journaled. I still have papers that she's written about her emotions and her husband, and it's so cool to look back on. So it's definitely something that runs in our family, for sure. And then in college, I, like I said, was involved in so many different things that it felt like I had a computer open in my brain with too many tabs. And I was like, I need to get this out somewhere, somehow. I had amazing friends around me that listened to me all the time. But for some reason, pen to paper felt so much more solid. And I was able to, one, become more articulate through it. And two, be able to track things better. Like, I could go back in my journals now and see the beginning of my TikTok journey. I could see relationships. I could see so many feelings that now I don't even relate to. I mean, I think journaling, in a way, you could sit and sulk a lot. But for me, it's more of like, okay, this is how I feel, and this is how we're going to navigate it. So it kind of just came naturally to me. It was just whenever my brain was too full, I knew I needed to write. And I would, and I would immediately feel better. And it helps. And I recommend so many people to do it.
It's amazing. I remember when we spoke as well, you were talking about how, like, there were certain things that you managed to make into a reality through those practices. Do you want to share that little tidbit with us on air?
Yeah, totally. I am such a go-getter. Maybe this sounds cocky, but I've always gotten what I wanted. My mom can testify to that. She knows that if I set my mind to something, I'm going to get it. Combining that with journaling, it almost becomes like easy. It's just you make a list of exactly what you want, and then you make a list of all the actions, and you just start following the actions, and then the stuff comes true. So in a way, yes, it's manifesting, but you have to combine it with action. When I was first counting every number to get to 10,000 on TikTok, because that's the number you need to get paid, and making an au pair salary, I was like, all right, let's make this into a payment, into a paycheck. So yeah, I'm literally like, okay, today I have 3,854 followers. Today I have 3,900 followers. Like, I was tracking every single person. So those first 10,000 people, shout out to you.
I love that. I think that's so interesting. apart from journaling, what have you learned about yourself in Paris that you didn't expect?
I love linguistics. Dabbled in languages, like, in college and high school. High school, I took Spanish. Cheated. I think everyone did in that class. And then I took an Italian class in university during COVID. Cheated. Which I'm mad at myself for, because I'm like, wow, those two romantic languages would have helped you learn French now, Sarah. But now I think living in France and being surrounded by the language, it inspires me so much. Plus, like I said, it's a way to express yourself. You kind of have to learn the language around you. I think it's respectful to the country that you're living in. I think it's a necessity. If I didn't live in Paris in France, I would be screwed, to put it simply. Like, Paris is very English. You could be fine if you just speak English, but anywhere else, you really have to know the language. And especially, like, if you really want to integrate yourself into the culture, it's a little bit controversial, but they say that, say, for example, in English, we are always talking about money, war, and sports, in American English, at least. And they say that language represents culture. So I was starting to realize all these things about English that, in a way, I had been programmed to relate to and to believe and to kind of wire my brain in this one way. And now learning French, it was like I'm creating new wires in my brain.
Which, what are they?
So I think French people love to talk about love. Of course, it's a very lovey language. To me, I think before, like, living in the States, I was such a business brain. I still am. Okay, I love entrepreneurism. But I'm starting to tap in more to, like, my lovey-dovey side. And I genuinely think it's because of, like, French culture, being surrounded by it, where people are embracing it more than just business, money, the grind. I've started just to become obsessed with languages. And the more you learn them, the more you're going to tap into different aspects of yourself. Actually, I know there's things in Italian, and it's food. All of their metaphors relate back to food. They will not shut up about it. And I'm like, it just shows you what they emphasize in their lives, how much truth there is to that. Because, like I said, the hypothesis is a bit controversial. And I think it was actually proven to not be true. But to me, it makes perfect sense. So I'm going to keep running with it.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I think it's really interesting as well.
Mm. In terms of what's next for you, because obviously interior design may not be it potentially, so tell us what's next.
Spill the tea.
Yeah, I always come back to interior design. Honestly, I think it's creating a space for other people to exist in is just the coolest thing. And the fact that I get to curate that just lights a fire under me. I love it. And when I was little, I was constantly watching HGTV, which my professors will get mad at me when I say, like, that's the reason I went into interior design. It's not. I loved it, and I still do. So I think in the long run, yes, it's something that I will fall back on, especially that's what my degree is in. Like, I have a lot of knowledge in it. But I think right now I'm trying to focus on what is motivating me in this moment instead of, oh, well, what do I think I'm going to be when I'm older? Like, I'm 23. I, to myself, am still a baby.
Yeah, rubbing it.
Yeah, sorry. But, I mean, in a way, I think we all are still babies. Like,
maybe not Krishna.
I tell my mom this all the time, though, and she's 50-something, and she's restarting her life right now. Like, I don't think there's a cap on that at all. I think if you are doing in that moment what is motivating you, then just run with it. I don't think it matters on, oh, well, technically my degree's in this, so I should. Like, there's no should. Should is such a stupid word. Right now, my focus is on social media, doing the whole French thing, au pairing. There is a cap to that, which it is in next September when my visa expires. So yes, I do have to figure out something before that to get a new visa, but I will stay in Europe. I just don't know what my next visa will be under, so that might determine my career a little bit. But for the most part, I would like to continue doing social media. I have so much fun with making videos and kind of just seeing where that takes me. Like, I feel like I couldn't have predicted where I am right now, sitting in this podcast room in London, like a year ago, especially. I knew that it was what I was working towards, but so many random opportunities have come out of this that I could have just never predicted. So I've stopped predicting.
In terms of kind of the influencing side of things, obviously, because like content creation takes up a lot of time and energy and things like that as well. Have you kind of been balancing everything within that space and au pairing, and do you have time for yourself anymore?
Totally. That's probably the number one thing that I prioritize is time for myself. Maybe to a degree that's almost absurd, but like every morning I make sure to journal, exercise, meditate sometimes. I'm not very good at meditating right now, but I'm trying to tap more into that. If it's choosing between hanging out with my friends and taking time for myself, I'm going to take time for myself. So yeah, I'm very good at making sure I have myself in check. I will say it is a lot. It's a lot to manage. I'm working two jobs right now, in a way. So I'm doing the content creation, and I'm also au pairing. And I think the hardest part is when I go to au pair the kids, clocking out of the content creation side and just being present, like I said, that is something that I take very seriously. Not wanting to be a nanny that's constantly on her phone or thinking about, oh, what other things do I have due tomorrow, or what videos do I have to make tomorrow that are due. I just think that they deserve a nanny that's going to be present with them. I try to, the second it's picking them up from school, just to be there with them and to do my job that I came for, which is to be a nanny, an au pair. Yeah, during the day, I do the content creation thing. I've kind of got a good schedule going to where I've figured out how to balance it, but a lot of days it does feel like a lot. In content creation, I think like you are thinking about new ideas every single second of every day. So it's like you're not really working a 9-to-5 to where you can just clock out. The brain never shuts off in that department. So that can get very overwhelming. But yeah, I just try to keep myself in check.
Fair enough. But it seems like you've settled really well into Europe. And it sounds like you're like really sinking into Paris. But there must be something that you'll never get used to no matter how long you live there. What is that?
I think the small talk. Like, this is definitely just a Paris thing.
You're American.
Yeah, yes. I swear Americans, like, love the small talk.
I love small talk. I will never get over it. That's the thing. They don't like it. Parisians are not small talkers at all. They're like, just get on with your day. And I am not about that. And especially as I learn more French, the more I'm going to chime into small talk. Like, now I can actually speak their language, so I want to interact with them more. In a way, it's practice for me, which I know sometimes they can get annoyed with. I think that small talk is such a simple pleasure in your everyday life. Like, that also creates community in my eyes. I loved doing it in California. Like, I'd be on the sidewalk talking to a random old woman about the lemon tree. Like, random stuff. It doesn't have to be super significant, but it would literally make my day. Having come from a place where small talk is pushed a lot, I'll never come around to the Parisians' way of just being so, like, dead face. You're in a rush all the time. Like, no, I'm sorry. Get off your phone and chime into someone sitting next to you on the metro. Like, you never know.
Wow. I think that's amazing. I mean, I think Paris and Hong Kong are very similar.
Yeah, by the sounds of it.
Small talk would scare us. No one chat to us in the street, please.
Yeah, yeah. It sometimes catches them off guard. But I kind of like being that little, like, speed bump. You got to kind of gauge it, right? Like, if they're really in a rush, don't. Like, come on, don't be that guy. But if you're both sitting somewhere, like, on a bench and you're chilling, like, I don't know, chime into conversation. If they don't pick it up, drop it. But if they do, then it's sick.
It's true. Yeah.
That is true. Some of us are a bit extreme with small talk, but we'll save that for another time.
I get it.
But in terms of a French habit that you've developed, what's one that you would take back home with you?
So I have been told that my sound effects have gotten very French. Like, now when I'm talking to people that just arrived, I was with an Australian the other day. We went on a coffee date and I kept going, pff. She was like, that's so French. I was like, wow, I don't even notice that. Like, they rub off on you so easily. All their little sound effects that they make, they're like, boh, or pff, and then they go, pff. It's so funny. But yeah, I've definitely, like, clocked into that a lot. But again, it's not something I've really recognized until other people pointed out. So that, I love it. It's fun. But secondly, they are not people pleasers, which again is a very American thing, especially coming from LA County. Like, oh, people will kiss your butt all the time. It just gets to a point where it's like, yeah, you're putting yourself at risk or aside and not really prioritizing yourself. Like, I was huge on this in university. I was always doing things for people, always making sure everyone else was taken care of before myself. But then I got to France and it's like, they want to displease you. Like, it's almost the complete opposite. And I was like, whoa, like, kind of, yeah, caught off guard from it a little bit. But after a while, I recognize, like, why they do it and the significance it has. And I've definitely adopted it. Like, now when I talk to American friends back home, I'm so strict with myself, like, so certain. If I don't want to go out, I'm going to be like, no. No, sorry. Like, not even say sorry, actually, because yeah, French people don't apologize.
Love that.
So yeah, I think it is such a good skill to develop, especially going into like an entrepreneur field. You need to learn how to not people please, learn how to say no, learn how to stand your ground. And I respect that a lot from their culture. And I really think I've picked it up and have mastered it since being in Paris.
Unapologetically you. I love that.
We have 3 quick fire beauty questions we have for every guest. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So the first one is, what's one beauty rule you love breaking?
I mean, I don't know if this is a break, but being your natural self has kind of been forgotten a little bit in today's society. I think we are so about, especially in LA, we are so about changing our looks to be a certain way and to fit this certain type of girl, especially women. I don't know how it is on the male side, but for women, it's big lips, big eyelashes, blonde hair in California specifically, big boobs, big butt, perfect abs. And that is extremely exhausting. So I think that I would vouch for anyone to just be their natural self. I don't really know if that's like breaking some major rule, but we're seemingly going farther and farther away from that. So
yeah, mm-hmm. Love that.
I like to embrace it.
If you could give your younger self one piece of beauty advice, what would it be?
I say this with straight hair, but stop straightening your hair. I feel so good in straight hair, but I also think that curly hair is so cool. Like, on a good curly hair day, oh, I'm magnetic. I'm still trying to master the curly hair routine, and it can really add to your outfit. So yeah, embrace that.
Amazing. What's a moment in terms of beauty that's good or bad that you'll never forget on yourself?
When I was little, I would take, you know how like on lampposts you put Christmas bows? I would take those and put them in my hair when I was little because I was a cheerleader growing up. I loved cheer, but I also loved bows. And I would wear them so casually to school. They're huge.
Like, yeah.
And there's pictures of me in my yearbook where I'm wearing these like big bows. But then my mom let me have Facebook at a very young age, and I was obsessed with CamWow app. So I would go and take the Christmas bows that were meant for giant lampposts, and I would put them in my hair. And I'll never forget those images. Probably still exist somewhere online. But I think it's so representative of my personality. Go big or go home.
I love that. I love that. Before we officially wrap up, we have a card reading segment for you. And dope. They're all beauty themed. So we'll just do a little reading for you for your trip here.
Okay, I love it.
Reconnect with your sense of self.
There we go.
Love that. Don't try the London aesthetic. Try the Sarah aesthetic.
Just do what you want. Be yourself.
And on that note, you do you. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. Your story is a really good reminder about stepping out of your comfort zone. And sometimes it means stepping across continents.
Yeah. We'll take a hop across the pond.
We've absolutely loved it, as well as, you know, your journey, how it worked out, and what's next for you. We can't wait for it.
Thanks for having me.